Raghav, welcome yes. to Brown Game Strong.
Thank you.
I don't know what I did in a past life to have you sitting in front of me right now, because
stop it.
I know it's cheesy, but as I was saying to you just now, your music formed a huge part of who I am today.
Well, thank you.
And I'm not just saying this for myself. I say this for a generation of 80s babies, 90s babies, people who are, you know, desi, but maybe don't live in the homeland.
Mm-hmm.
They are confused about where they fit in.
Yeah.
They're code switching. And I feel like we are a manifestation of that music that you've produced. I grew up dancing to it. I am a dancer, and Your Angel Eyes is probably something that every time it comes on, you know, the dancing starts, and it started from a very, very young age. Can't Get Enough is my anthem. And I'm not just saying these things. I think you probably don't realize the impact that you've had on us. And there's a nostalgia. Like, I live in the noughties.
Mm-hmm.
I live in that era of music. I feel like that is the best era of music. And you formed part of that. So thank you. I want to start
thank
with
you.
That.
Thank you for saying that. It's very sweet.
And I'm really excited that you're here in London. You're
yeah.
promoting your new track, Desperado.
I'm excited too. It feels, you know, I didn't know if this would happen again in this way, you know? So
yeah.
I'm also excited. And I appreciate you saying that very much. Trust me, it means a lot.
I want to start off by just asking what it's been like for you, you know, being back, you know, getting back into promotion season, being in London, doing BBC, like all
yeah.
things, doing this podcast.
Well, it's been wonderful. It's been great. It's been a little overwhelming. I mean, the fan reaction to the new single has been amazing. I think this record feels a little more, how do I put it? Like, it feels more special than stuff I've released in the past few years. Special is the wrong word. It feels a little more like, let me say it like this. During COVID, my historic music made such a resurgence because of reels and TikTok reels and Insta reels, and it was trending again. And that was the one time when I wasn't really doing a lot of work. I was just sitting at home. And the reflection of my thankfulness that that moment happened again is displayed in the new music.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, let's go in and let's give these core fans who've been putting me on their back for 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years, let's give them exactly what they want, you know? No matter what I released after Storyteller between then and Desperado now, no matter what I released, people would say, this is great music, or we like this, or we don't like this. The comments were always like, when are we going to get something that has the same ingredients as Storyteller? And Desperado is that. It has an old Bollywood sample in it. It has a driving beat. It has a song that has that same feel to it, you know? But we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a recreation of 2004, that it was a step forward. It was like a fresh sound for today. But as things often happen in the arts, they come full circle.
Yeah.
And so that sounds really fresh now. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the most interesting comments that I see repeatedly, like the Quickstyle just did a video of Let's Work It Out.
That's, in Mumbai.
That's gone in Mumbai. That's gone viral, I guess, everything. That's the only way to put it. It had like 42 million views, and then there was a bunch of reels made to it. It's still trending online. And when I read the comments, like on the Quickstyle video, for example, a lot of people are like, oh, this is Raghav, and we miss him, and the really great stuff. Then there's a section of people who are like, oh, this track sounds dope. When's it going to drop? And it's like, oh, well, it came out 19 years ago. So, it's a pretty cool feeling when your career can come full circle, that your old music is both remembered with some nostalgic value, and folks that maybe weren't around when it was popping are like, oh, this is dope. I just discovered it. When's it coming out? You know?
Mm.
So all of that, the past few months, has just been overwhelming. Feels like perfect timing for, I mean, there's really no other word for it. It is a comeback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what a comeback. And I think your music that exists today is quite timeless anyway. I think the beats resonate with people of all ages, you know, that are alive today. I know I was mentioning I live in nostalgia, but that's also because, you know, this is music that is catchy, and it is music that reminds us of how good, you know, times were and are today as well. But like, you know, the parties we went to when we were teenagers or in our early 20s, like all those memories come back.
Yeah.
And you kind of associate them with these songs. So I'm really glad you're back.
Thank you.
I want to start off by asking about young Raghav, about your childhood. On Brown Game Strong, we really believe that, you know, it's important to learn about where we've come from, because that kind of determines, you know, what things motivate you today, what drives you to create the kind of work that you create today, and what stories and messages you want to put out. So I read that you grew up in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
And you spent time in India.
Well, not really. Okay. Like just like everybody else, I went on a couple of vacations when I was a kid. In my childhood, I didn't spend a lot of time in India. No.
Did you not? Okay, no. So it was when you were a bit older.
It was after my career started popping off that I would go there to perform, and then I'd spend a lot of time in India. But growing up, we'd go once every few years to Delhi. I actually never went to Bombay until my album was number one in India.
Wow.
Okay. The day we landed there. So, but we're very, I'm very Indian. Like, it's pretty apparent in my music, you know? So that's just down to my family, you know?
Mm. But and I was going to ask about that. What was your relationship like with your roots?
Well, my roots are my parents, and their roots were strong. And they, you know, when they moved to Canada, like a lot of immigrants that came over, they were the only brown faces at work or at in the town. They immigrated from India to Quebec. Mm. My father had had a job there already in the mid to late 60s, and then he went back to India for a trip, I guess to find a wife. And he went to India, and he met my mom, and they got married. And within a fortnight, like literally, they met on a Wednesday, they were married by the next weekend. And, you know, within a fortnight, mom had moved with a stranger from India to the coldest and coldest of winters in Canada. And so when that happens, you keep your roots intact, because really it's all you have in a very strange village in some ways. They moved to Sept-Îles, Quebec. And they just did a wonderful job of that. My sister and I grew up on Hindi cinema, Hindi music, the food, the culture. But it wasn't done in like a segregatory way where we weren't part of anything else that was happening in society. It was just like, it was just like an added thing we had in our lives, you know? Yeah. So it always felt like a benefit. It never felt like a hindrance in any way that we were any less anything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And so it was just beautiful. And the big thing was music. It just always played in the home.
Songs played in the home?
Well, a lot of the stuff I've sampled, you know, a lot of Opie Nair stuff, like Kabhi Aar Kabhi Paar, and from that era, the Devanand and Dilip Kumar era, going into Artie Burman. Obviously, my sister is 9 years older than me, so, but by the time mom was still playing Opie Nair and Mukesh and Mohammed Rafi and all those voices that, you know, are evergreen, my sister had got into Artie Burman, and she was a big Amitabh Bachchan fan, which, well, of course I am. And yeah, it was just the soundtrack of our home, you know. Harry Belafonte died this week, and I just told online that my father used to work in Germany, and one time he came back with a Harry Belafonte tape for me, and it just like, I just played it over and over again, because dad bought it for me, and I just fell in love with the sounds of the island. So somewhere between those sounds and then the old Hindi film music, and then me getting into Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder, like that is storyteller. That is exactly what my music is and what made me who I am. So my childhood was rooted in the arts, and very lucky. I grew up in a very fun home. There was a lot of laughter in our home. Today, even now, like I feel like I'm in a good relationship if I'm laughing a lot with somebody. Yeah. And it was just, you know, I hit the parents' jackpot. Mm. Like there is no sitting here telling stories that I have to overcome my childhood. I was very lucky. In fact, you know, as I've gotten older and met people and dated people and friends and all that, you know, I know now more how lucky I am that my childhood was. In fact, most, if I have dysfunctions that I've had to overcome, they've been in my adulthood. Yeah. They were not really in my childhood, you know? So I was very lucky because of that, because it gave me a baseline to come back to whenever I strayed.
Was it when you became famous?
No, what you mean in terms of like when I started to maybe deal with some difficulty?
Yeah.
No, I mean, the first couple of years were really great. I think the idea that, you know, when you have so much success, I don't want to say early on because I really struggled. Like, you know, my debut album didn't come out till my mid-20s and I'd been away from home since I was 18. So when you're away from home for 6, 7, 8 years without any success and all your friends have become engineers or accountants or doctors or whatever, I mean, by the time the album, you know, just before the album came out, I felt like an abject failure.
Yeah.
So the good thing is I didn't quit before the miracle happened and I had people in my life that wouldn't allow me to do that. So, but I, yes, my 30s were really difficult. My 30s were like very hard. We could do many hours of podcast on my 30s.
Great. I'm looking forward because I'm turning 30 this year.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, yeah, I think you'll be fine. But I had a very unique set of 20s. Mm. And, you know, the music industry completely changed. I mean, the format of how people consumed art, the expectations that were set based on my debut record, signed to a major, and then all of a sudden I didn't have a record deal. I was paying for everything myself. It's different when you have to pay for things yourself and
yeah.
You're calling folks to, you know, like I was on billboards and now you're like, how do you get on a billboard? Like, mm-hmm. How does that work? And you're figuring it out as you go along and it's really hard and not everyone in the industry is entirely trustworthy.
Yeah.
And I think I was jaded. I was probably a little frustrated. They wanted me to change my name. Labels were interested in my music, but they would say, you know, the Indian thing is kind of done. And I was like, well, I can't all of a sudden be un-Indian. And they're like, well, you could be culturally ambiguous. You know, you could just change your name to like Ricky Ray or something that's like ambiguous. And I'm like, I don't think I could do that. So in fact, I doubled down and my next album was called Identity in a moment of great passive aggression and decided to have more Hindi stuff and more Indian influence on the next album. But again, I was doing it all on my own. I would license it, but it was a really different climate. And to be fair to music executives, all of a sudden we went from me doing signings in HMV to iTunes to Napster. Like it was really weird and really strange. I'd sold more than a million albums of my first album. And then all of a sudden the CNN ticker would show other artists reaching a million albums who were much bigger names than I was. So that's how exponentially less albums were being sold in the marketplace. Yeah. And it changed so much. And I was trying to navigate all that. And I felt like I was swimming alone in very deep waters, you know? And though it was a great time to learn and I was still having successes that allowed me to continue my career, it was a really difficult place to go from just being an artist to all of a sudden having to figure it all out and making huge life decisions like, are you going to change your name? Are you going to be a completely different artist? Are you going to be less Indian? And fighting that against your morality and trying to be at peace with the consequences of that decision. It took a while to get there.
I'm glad you didn't change your name, and I'm glad you stuck to your values. When I go on your songs on YouTube, the first few comments that I see are always, Raghav is one of the most underrated artists. He needs to make a comeback. You know, there's years of these sort of comments that sit on your videos. Why were you not supported by the big production houses when you started out? You're one of the most talented musicians we've seen in our era.
I don't know that. I think when I started out, I was really supported. I think, you know, V2 was incredibly supportive of my debut record. But look, I think plain and simple, a lot of folks in the Western music industry, particularly here in England, to whom I owe a lot of, I don't have a career if it's not for the British music industry. So I say this with a great deal of nuance.
Mm.
There was, simply put, this idea that the South Asian, the Indian, whatever you want to call it, music scene, that it was an Indian summer.
Mm.
And that it was a bit of a novelty. And those comments you see are from people that view art based on the merit of it. That is not the reality of how the music industry works. And I got pushed off stage a little bit, you know, and I tried to do everything I could to find my way back. And it's not like I don't have fault in that. You know, when you don't know things and you're trying to, you know, you can make some bad decisions.
Yeah.
So I take accountability for maybe years where my music didn't have the stage that it deserved. But for the most part, it was an industry that kind of, you know, right away discarded me and looked at me maybe as like a has-been while I was still being.
Yeah.
So it was very strange because they weren't speaking to my core fan base. Hmm. What has proven to be true over time is that I've not stopped touring. I've not stopped making fans happy. And then I think with this record, there's a real feeling like, you know, it's come full circle.
Yeah.
With the historic music now having a resurgence and now me being able to make those same kind of records for my fans. It's pretty special. But yes, it's not been a straight line.
Well, is it because you were just simply ahead of your times?
Well, that's very sweet of you to say. I don't think so. I mean, I think that the reason it was successful is because it was right for the time.
Mm.
And, you know, when I'm dead and gone, maybe we'll say that there were some years there where it could have progressed into something different. But here's the truth of the matter. To get to the next level, it would have cost a lot more money. And in order for that to do that, it would have required someone to believe in this guy that had a really strange name that doesn't sit here and look like Brad Pitt, and just his music just connects with the people he makes it for. And very surprisingly, that is not always the metric by which success is gauged in the music industry. But over time, it evens out. You know, the best example I give is Tina Turner, because, you know, Tina's early success was tied to a very horrific man in a very awful situation, but she was a big star. Mm. But her best part of her career was kind of where I am now. So sometimes I go to bed at night going, maybe the best is yet to come, you know? So I'm going to either do it or die trying.
That's a great way to think about things.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that you were pushed off stage a little bit at times. I can name many other artists who I listen to the same time that I listen to your work. And I always wonder, what was the industry like among artists at the time? Was it collaborative? Was it, there's only room for one? What was that like?
Well, I'm trying to like get to the meat of that question right away. Like I guess what you're saying is that was it over competitive?
Yeah. Was it competitive?
I mean, yeah, it's a, like, you know, there's a lot of type A personalities in our industry. There's a lot of competition. There's also a lot of grace. There's a lot of humility, and there's a lot of wonderful people. You know, people thought Rishi Rich and I were like rivals for years. Honestly, like, I'd be hard pressed to name a kinder, more wonderful person in the music industry than Rishi. Rishi and I are very, you know, we think similarly in a lot of ways.
Mm.
So would Rishi tell you that there was only room for one person? I don't think so. Would I tell you that? I don't think so. Mm. In fact, I think not. I think the more people there are, the more there is a scene, and different people take turns at the top if they're great. I mean, competition can make you better if it's not toxic, you know?
Yeah.
So no, I think internally that's less of a thing. Now, does the music industry believe there can be more than one? Listen, I think that now we're at a time where we're starting to reevaluate whether we treated women, people of color, with the same fairness. Did we treat them? Were their successes valued for the merit of them, or did we kind of use them as novelties to tick a box that allowed us to feel good about ourselves? And then when they needed our help the most, were we there to help them realize their full potential? And I think in a lot of those cases, a lot of people would regret how they handled those situations. but we've had progress. We are having progress. Quite honestly, I'm not sure if I was, you know, touching the other side of 40 as I am now, 20 years ago, trying to make a comeback in the chart world, maybe that wouldn't have been allowed back then. Mm. Maybe they would have been like, absolutely not. We got boy bands and everything here is from 18 to 23. Mm. So maybe I'm benefiting now from people looking upon that differently. So it swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. Yeah, because actually, listening to your new track, I feel like it's got so many elements of your old music.
Yeah.
And that's such a wonderful thing that you've kind of kept the soul of it intact, because actually it is the way that people are perceiving it now. It is the way that it's catchy. It's the way that it generates, you know, the need to do a little dance video to it and then it goes viral. Yeah. And I think it is ahead of its times in that sense, you know, that your music now is taking off in that way. And I mean, those who know, because we were there on day one.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process of fusing classical Bollywood songs like Choli Ke Piche, like Kabhi Yaar Kabhi Paar, which you mentioned, Chura Liya Hai Tumne, with your hip-hop beats that you introduce, your own lyrics and various instrumentals. It's kind of genius. How do you do it? What's the process?
My process is very simple. I call Mushtaq because, you know, he is... you know, he's a brother in multiple sense of the word, but you know, he just knows my sound. It's not my sound, it's our sound, you know, and oftentimes the producers don't get the credit for the joint creation that it takes to make people feel something. So though when you say it can't get enough or you love the... Let's Work It Out or You Love Ain't Nobody, those are tracks I did with Mushtaq. Mm. If You Love Angel Eyes, that's a track I did with Sly and Robbie. Like that is, I play a part in it. I vocal it. I write a great portion of it. But the feeling that you get, the emotional connectivity of that record, the emotional connectivity that connects you from Desperado back to Can't Get Enough, that is Mush and I. Mm. It's both of us. So, I couldn't recreate it with anybody else. If I could have, I would have.
Yeah.
Because I would have been able to say it was all me and it doesn't matter who I work with. But that would be a lie. No.
Have you ever watched the Disney film Ratatouille?
But yeah, I love it. It was one of my favorite films.
You know that scene where Remy's trying to teach his brother, who's just eating trash, Remy the little rat?
Yeah, at the beginning, or you mean no?
I don't know. It's like in the middle of somewhere.
Okay.
And he basically picks up a piece of, I think it's cheese, and then a grape, and they are so different.
Yeah.
And then he puts them together, and he says, each of these have a different flavor individually, and together they make something completely different.
That's right.
That is it, right? It's so wild that I thought of that analogy, but I thought that is how I can describe your music, because
that's right.
When I listen to, say, Can't Get Enough or Let's Work It Out, there are very, you know, old Indian Bollywood lyrics, and the sound is intact as it was, but you've turned it into something completely different, and suddenly I'm dancing to it and, you know, people are twerking to it, and you know, it's pretty wild how your brain works in that way to actually fuse it together. And it's nice that there's a partnership there, that you've been able to do it with someone. Because sometimes you just can't, I guess you can't recreate things. They just kind of happen, right? Like you hear so many, you know, motivational stories of people, oh, I do this and I do that and I wake up at 5 a.m. and, you know.
No, I don't.
But sometimes we're just there, like trying to figure it out, and it sometimes works out, right?
Look, the art lives as soulful as the artists who made it are. And Mush and I put, like, this is a labor of love. We are not in the studio cutting corners, and we're not just trying to get the record out. And if either of us have ever done that, you know, you would hear that on the record. But this is like, how do we make something that makes us go, oh, every 10, 20 seconds?
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do. That's magic, you know. And there's so few times in your life where, whether it's in your personal life or your work life or your love life, that you feel magic. And when you do, that's when you make something special, and that's when it lives for a long time.
Mm.
So just like the first records live for 20 years to date, and I think they'll live longer, I think what Mush and I have done on Desperado is going to live for quite some time as well. In an era where songs only live for like 4 weeks. Mm. So our goal is not to have a song that lives 4 to 6 weeks. Our goal is to have something that lives for another 25 years.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be a banger in 25 years.
I hope so.
How do you feel that your music has been perceived and consumed across the world through India, Canada, the UK, America? What are the differences in the audiences?
Well, you know, we spent so much time talking about how different we are, which is kind of why we're all a little fucked up today in so many ways. The truth is that there's so many similarities, it's uncanny. Mm. Like when I'm performing at a auditorium in Hyderabad, it is pretty much the same reaction I get in Houston or Halifax. Like, we are all quite similar. You know, it would be great now if my music could get the platform where it reaches the folks in the mass that it did before. So like now, for example, everything's going right on the record. We are trying to get Spotify to add the song to playlists because people love it when they hear it.
Yeah.
How do we get them to hear it?
Yeah.
What can we do to get them to hear it? And the truth of the matter is there are still gatekeepers. There are still ways to amplify the record. And being an independent artist, I don't have, you know, I don't have immediate access to everybody that can help me do that. So it's a longer process. But that's kind of fun too. It's fun to watch it grow. It's fun to prove people wrong. Mm. It's fun to exceed folks' expectations, you know? So that's my job right now, is to just be happy with what I got, but not give up and not get frustrated when it doesn't happen. You know, like it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Are you there yet?
Oh no, like not even close. I mean, you know, a few things happened in my life recently that made me realize that I'm quite a far away from being where I want to be. My daughter was born 7 years ago, and it was like, it was a surprise. It wasn't, you know, and my life situation has made it such that, you know, I'm a single dad. I co-parent, and you know, that's not how I drew it up, but whoever was drawing it kind of created a masterpiece because she's amazing. It's made me a better person in millions of ways. But more importantly, I kind of realized that, like, I don't want her to read old headlines. I still have so much to give and so much in me that I have a new motivation. And when you're an artist, there is a certain amount of, like, everything becomes about you.
Yeah.
And my daughter was born, and I was, like, very clearly in second place in every category in my life. So I would like her to experience what it feels like when her dad is doing something excellent in that moment, and, you know, how it feels and how people react to it. I want, very selfishly, for her to see and feel that. COVID, you know, when COVID first happened, I was like, oh my God, we're all going to die. and a lot of folks did.
Yes.
You know, it was like, it was horrific. And I remember thinking, you know, if I died today, the headline would be Angel Eyes singer Raghav has died. And I was like, okay, that's a pretty good headline, actually. You know, like I done did something. But then I thought, wow, actually, my only goal now artistically needs to be, from a big picture perspective, I got to change that headline between now and when I die. I got to change that headline. And that was a real focus point for me. And then the last thing that happened was, is my dad passed away in November. And dad was, he was 88. And it was not a tragedy. He lived a wonderful life. But, you know, it reminded me how blessed I was to have a father that loved me as unconditionally, and a mom that have loved me as unconditionally as they have. And that really, you know, by virtue of how much they've loved and cared for me and supported me, even when other people wouldn't have, I think a lot of people might have made fun of them for allowing their very eligible 18, 19-year-old son to go into the music business, that, you know, there's not really anything you can overcome if you have folks that love you like that. So that was, you know, when Dad passed in November, I was, you know, even though he was 88, I was heartbroken. And I was like, okay, well, you know, he's got a legacy that I want to carry on. And for me, one way to do it is through my music.
I'm really sorry to hear that your dad passed.
Oh, I appreciate that, but that's life.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
How has your grief shaped the way that you work?
Well, my grief is steeped in thankfulness. You know, like, you know, Dad was an incredible man. He was the first in his family to leave India and work abroad. And now, like, almost over 25 people from the lineage of that family have gone to done so and to do so. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Dad for having shaped the idea that you could do that. And, you know, I don't think my dad had a ton of support. He wanted to become an engineer. My dad studied in Germany.
Okay.
He studied in Germany in the early 1950s. Mm-hmm. But even before that, in the 40s, he would say, I want to go study in Germany. And I would kindly remind you that it was a rather strange dream for a child of color to say that he wanted to go to Germany in the 1940s, you know. But Dad had heard that the great engineers were coming out of the schools in Europe, and he had kind of stuck with them. So he did a lot on his own. He was a pioneer in his own way in many respects, that he followed his passion and he did what he wanted to do. And, you know, it's very easy for parents to, when it's their turn to have to be supportive, to withdraw that support because of the practicalities of their generation.
Yes.
Particularly when it's like, I want to go into music. And they just supported me. You know, when Dad passed, I went and found some old letters he'd sent me. And oh, they're very sweet. They're like, you know, the first letter that he sent when I went to study in England, you know, basically saying not to give up and that he, you know, how much they supported me and stuff. So anyway, I'm very lucky.
It sounds like you had a wonderful backing around you.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good. Nothing. You know? Yeah, yeah.
And I'm seeing some parallels in the way that your dad kind of didn't, you know, conform to expectations, maybe.
Oh, he most certainly did not. Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I guess so. In a really different way.
Yeah.
He was a nonconformist engineer. And, you know, he got a son that was like really different. No. Mom's very artistic. Okay. Mom co-wrote Teri Baaton with me.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's like, Mom is, you know, you give Mom a task to do that's steeped in talent. She's incredibly talented. Wow. And Dad didn't have those talents.
Mm.
But Dad's talent was just how to love.
I love that.
So pretty good.
That's sometimes all you need, right? You just need someone backing you and letting you fly.
Yeah, well, there was no fear of failure, right? Like I never feared that if I failed or I fucked up, that there was going to be some negative consequences at home for it as long as I tried. Mm-hmm. I think in my mid-20s, they were like, this is taking a bit long. You've been gone for a little bit now. And they were perhaps concerned that, you know, you can't see the label when you're in the jar. And I think they thought I was incredibly talented. And I was like, I think I'm really good at this. But it just, you know, it hadn't happened yet. But then when it, you know, we didn't, like I said, it's not that I didn't quit before the miracle. I mean, no one would have allowed me to.
Mm. What was the moment where you realized, shit, I've made it?
Oh, yeah. I think Top of the Pops. When I did, the first time I did Top of the Pops, that's when it was live. And a dancer almost kicked me in the head. That would have been, it would have been a blooper of all time. He's like an inch away from concussing me, a break dancer. And I came off stage and it was like, wow. Because, you know, I'd been in England long enough to know what that show meant.
Yeah.
And I knew what that meant for my career. And I knew that even if that was it, like,
it's pretty damn good.
That was pretty damn good. It felt really great.
Mm.
So I think that was a moment where I was like, wow, I can't believe I did this.
Mm. So we spoke about how your music has shaped maybe the identities or, you know, provided comfort to a lot of people, a generation of people who may have been confused in their identity. Is that an intention that you had when you were creating your music?
No, I mean, you know, in fact, anything, I was inspired because I'd been here the years previous and I was watching Goodness Gracious Me.
Yeah.
And discovered Nitin Sahni and Talvin Singh. And obviously, previously, I'd grown up with Apache Indian. Yeah. So for me, it was just like the next line and like, what? How do I do it?
Mm.
You know, what is my instrument and what am I doing? And it just felt natural. I knew that there was millions of people like me. And here's the thing. It's not like it was music just made for NRIs. I mean, my music, very thankfully, has a special place in the heart of people in India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. And if I've forgotten a country, please forgive me. But everywhere, you know what I mean? That is, it's just about our culture. And the really cool thing is, like, if I took a sample from a 50s record over here in the West, there might be a few folks that know it. But, you know, when I take Kabhiar, Kabipar, or Churalia, or Leke Pela Pela Pyar, and it's not remixing it, please, for God's sake, don't call it that. It's honoring that composition by putting it, melting it with Mushtaq into a new composition.
Yeah.
Our culture is just different. The 8-year-olds know it. They know something that happened 50 years before they were born, because the arts, film, cinema, and the music around cinema is such a huge part of our lives.
Yeah.
That it was like a branch that, you know, eventually it was going to turn into its own forest.
Yeah.
And I just planted some seeds there.
A lot of those songs are before my time. I know all the lyrics.
Yeah, of course.
We all do.
Yeah. And not even like Churalia is a classic.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say Kabhiar, Kabipar. I wouldn't say that's a classic that every, but you just know it. Do you know what I mean?
You know why we know it? Because what? There was a remix era. And there was a remix of it that we all know. I want to ask you how you felt about that era where we went through, you know, Baby Doll, DJ Doll.
Yeah, I fucking hated it. Because actually, the only reason they did it is because it was in my record, maybe, in Can't Get Enough. And this is the one area where I do get a little perturbed.
I can see it.
Is that, you know, this was another thing, is that while I sit here and talk about the Western music industry and maybe how some doors were shut that really, based on merit, should not have been shut in retrospect, and my fans will now attest to that, in India, it was very difficult to see that, like, I'd made an impact, and rather than carve out a space for a very unique artist who could make more of an impact, they just watered down my ideas and copied them and turn them into these remixes and put a short skirt and a girl, and just, it was
degrading.
It was disheartening. And it was thievery.
Mm.
It was stealing, you know, and it was heartbreaking, because, you know, at a time when I needed the Indian music industry the most,
mm,
to say, no. If you're not going to take this on board, we're going to take him on board. He's part of our tribe.
Yeah.
I didn't get that either. You know what I mean? Mm. And that's the nature of it. I mean, perhaps it was romantic of me to expect that.
Mm.
And capitalism doesn't work that way. But it made the feeling now when I take a sample and I put it in Desperado is different. I had to get over that.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't just do that. I would send demos sometimes of songs that sounded, you know, and by the time I sent the demo and the paperwork was done, I would hear my demo in a movie that was so close.
Hmm.
And, you know, Mira Sayal once told me, when I was kind of just bitching about this one day, she's like, Raghav, the word copyright in India means they have the right to copy your shit. And, she was right. So that was difficult. But now, because we can speak to our fans directly, some of those same folks are, they have to recognize, mm, that there is some value.
Yeah.
You can't just take something and run with it in a way that is not moral, that could come back to you. and I can speak to my fans directly. I mean, it's still a cumbersome process, but like I said, we've made some progress.
Speaking of, you know, thievery, there was also a whole era where we all downloaded songs on LimeWire, myself included. I think I probably downloaded your songs on LimeWire. I apologize for that. Yeah, but cool. What was it like seeing all of that happen around you?
That, you know, I don't look at that as I think there was just a lot of confusion. I think technology, the industry had not yet caught up with where technology was at. And you couldn't expect the consumer to not want to consume it any way they could.
Especially when it's so readily available.
So it took some time. That was a paradigm shift in the entertainment business, and it was, you know, right at the peak of my success. So there was some collateral damage there. There was also some collateral benefit. You know, I have a plaque in my house that says I sold 1 million records in India. The truth of the matter is I probably sold 5 or 10 million.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, you can't count all that because of technology. So I live in a lot more people's homes than the paperwork would give me credit for.
Yeah.
So how can I complain about it when I'm benefiting from it at the same time? Make sense?
Because it doesn't pay you?
Well, it does in a roundabout way. You live in that many people's homes, there's more live events. There's more other things that happen. Yes, it's not perfect. It's not fair. But if I sat here and was upset about everything that wasn't fair, I wouldn't have made it here today.
Yeah.
So, you know, just there's a collateral benefit to everything that has collateral damage.
Yeah. You move on.
You have to. And that's why my 30s were hard, is trying to figure out how much what am I focusing on? And now I know what I want to focus on.
You've done a stint in Bollywood. You worked with Abhishek Bachchan. Was it Ishq Shabba?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Ishq Shabba was incredible. Working with A.R. Rahman is a dream come true. And I, you know, both the people you've mentioned, A.R. Rahman and Abhishek Bachchan, I met them at a very difficult period of my life. And both of them had a huge impact, more than they'll ever know, in getting me back on a path where I felt like myself again. Because I got to see two people. Obviously, Abhishek comes from a pretty unique situation, you know, and that comes with some collateral benefit for sure, but it also comes with some vile, vile unfairness from folks, you know?
Yeah.
And this man handled everything when I was in his presence. You could just see that he was raised in a manner that he dealt with everything with class and rose above it. And welcomed people. He just, when you're around him, you feel great. And it's not fake. And he's intelligent and smart and kind and confident in himself and loves his family. And actually, I remember thinking, you know, my dad's not Amitabh Bachchan and my mom's not Jaya Bachchan, but I come from a very similar family.
Yeah.
You know, that they just, they're there for each other. And it was at a time in my life where I was frustrated. And I could just see that he didn't let frustration get to him. It was a wasted emotion for him. And A.R. Rahman, same thing, you know, again, very different, a different set of circumstances and trials and tribulations, but also the maybe one of the most revered musicians ever. And the way he handled that was incredible. And the way he communicated his art was incredible. And the way he didn't take it too seriously if something wasn't going right. You know, like, I learned a lot from those guys about excellence and about compassion and about dealing with stuff. So when you talk about those two songs that I did, I actually don't think about the music. I think about the friendships and the life lessons I learned from them.
That's lovely.
It's true.
Some of your songs portray a lot of emotion. My favorite song of yours is Hamrahi.
Okay. Mom wrote that as well.
Really?
With me, yeah.
Okay, I can tell. There's a trend. I can see it now. How do you draw from your personal experiences when you write soulful lyrics and music like that?
Even after the first album, I was like, I want to put out more slow music. But, you know, my business was not such that slow music was profitable. Like, I wasn't going to get more live work because I was putting out slow records. Like, I was playing clubs. You know what I mean? If you've been to a gig of mine, you know, that's kind of what the fans wanted to see. But to me, it was about expanding into, like, it still is in some ways, you know, like, I would love to sit at Radio 2, you know? That's kind of where I would like to be as an artist. That's where the trajectory of my art will go over the next year and a half, I think. It's just those records have to be even more honest.
Yeah.
Every record has to be honest. Every song has to be honest. But like I grew up in Western Canada. I listen to a lot of country music. So I know how a turn of a phrase or a word or jump from an end of a pre-chorus into a chorus, how it can move your emotions. Mm. And that's the same in Hindi music, you know. It's the same in any genre, R&B, you know. So Boys to Men. So I would love to make more music like that, but I do love making mid-tempo and slow songs. And for me, like, it really tests my writing ability.
Yeah. So we're in 2023.
Okay, good.
The TikTok era.
Yeah.
You have a song coming out with Tesha, who completely blew up.
Yeah.
With his young Shah Rukh, his Jalebi baby. What was the process like of creating with him? And did you reach out to him? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. I just was like, you got to be on this record. I sent him a couple of choices, but he actually picked this one. And I'm learning a lot from him. He's incredible.
He's like a mini version of you in many ways.
Actually, that is true.
Yeah.
When I see him, I do feel like I've, you know, whatever the record does, I feel like I've gained a bit of a little brother. Because, you know, Jalebi Baby reminds me of where Angel Eyes a little bit. And we're from similar parts of Canada. We have a similar sense of humor. There's a lot there that's uncannily similar, actually. And I'm rooting for him. I have no doubt that he's going to take our music to new heights. And I feel pretty privileged that he's on this journey with me. You know, it says a lot about him, too, that coming off Jalebi Baby, this is the first record he's been on since Jalebi Baby's been out. And coming off of that, he probably had a lot of choices on what he was going to do next.
Yeah.
That he was on this and showed belief in this. I appreciate that, but it says a lot about him as a person, too.
Yeah. I think he saw it the way you might have seen it as well. There's magic here to be created. And it is magic.
I hope so.
From your almost 20 years of experience in this music industry, what do you hope to now see more of in this space?
I think art should be a meritocracy. I think what people feel is what should resonate. I think we're entering a time where that is the case, more so than it's been for quite some time. I also hope that people live with stuff that they love longer than they are. You know, it's an era where we listen to 15 seconds of a song rather than the full 2.5, 3.5, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It's an era where things are happening so quickly. Anyone, you could release a song today and have it on iTunes tomorrow or have it on Spotify tomorrow, that we're inundated with so much information, it is hard to let that sometimes seep in beyond your pores. But great art will resonate with you decades later. So it is benefit to everybody if something they love, if it sticks with them,
yeah.
You know, for a long time. So I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it's the resurgence of the album. I don't know, the comeback of the album. I don't know exactly what that is, but that I think is the next step, you know, is how do we make things last longer?
And be slower.
And be maybe a little slower, yeah. I agree with that.
I'm going to throw you under the bus.
Thank you.
Well, this is selfish because I'm sitting opposite you. Please, could you sing a verse of Teri Baaton Mein for us?
Yeah, of course. O teri aankhon mein इकरार की बातों में भीगी भीगी रातों में मुझको है खो जाना हो तेरी बातों में ऐसा उलझा जिया बैठे ही बैठे मैंने दिल खो दिया हो
Thank you.
That was fun.
Final question for you, Raghu.
Okay.
What do you have strong game in?
I'm a good cook. I got strong. You know what I have strong game in? Is my home has a great atmosphere.
Love that.
My home is a happy place. So I got a strong game in having inherited this from my folks that my home will be a happy place.
And I hope you continue to take that happiness and spread it around the world.
Yeah, I had to find it again. It was lost for a little bit myself, so yeah.
Raghav, I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming on today. It's been a complete honor. It's been a pleasure to speak
thank
with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
I wish you all the success with all the upcoming tracks that you have. And we'll be there. We'll be there cheering, rooting,
great.
Creating TikToks, reels, all of that.
Do it.
And we're really glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back. Thank you very much.